SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964 on Sirius XM Online and at our website, stevebick.com. And I'm laughing. You can always hear me. You can hear my voice. This morning, if you were listening to just now to Michael McCarthy, but right before him, the visit with Meg, and it occurred to me, I was just straightening the desk, get stuff organized before the show, and that program that I referenced to Meg, I said, let me put it here. I'll take a picture. It was open. It was, the middle part is the wood memorial, center spread with the silks, the color page. So I said, let me put this up on Twitter. People will like it, I think. And that said, all right, here, let me take a picture of the cover. And I'm thumbing through, and I don't remember the last time I looked at this, and I'm pretty sure that my late friend Malcolm Souness, I think this was in some stuff that I don't remember. I don't remember the race and it being there in person. The more I thought about it after he talked to Meg, I would have remembered Gulch and company. So I think this was, I've got quite a few programs that Malcolm gave me a big box of stuff. So I think it came from there. And so I thumbing through it, and I get to the near the back, and there's the racetrack jumble, sort of like junior jumble and adult jumble, with the letters mixed up, and you fill it out, and there's circled letters, and then those circled letters become part of an answer to the clue and all that. Anyway, Mig, it just so happens that Migliori was one of the words in the racetrack jumble. It made me laugh. And then I look to the right, and here's Karen Johnson, the wonderful Karen Johnson, PG's daughter. And at the time, so this is 87, she was working in the NYRA communications office. So she had written a nice feature about the race and D. Wayne and Capote and so forth. So I put all that up on Twitter. It's kind of fun. And old programs from any sport are a riot. They're just so much fun. And I've got too many. And in fact, on that topic, circling back to Tina consolidating things, I don't know what to do. I got rid of a few programs. Some people took me up on that offer early in the pandemic to make a contribution, and I sent out a bunch. I sent out a handful. I must have sent out a dozen. But I've got so much, and I don't know what to do. This stuff is, just because Tina put it in boxes doesn't mean that it's straightened up. I mean, now I've moved it to the ante office. So I've said to her, who's had tag sales or yard sale type stuff? I don't know. I don't. You can't count on the weather. What do you do then? I don't know. I got to do something. And I just can't see myself putting stuff on eBay. I don't know. And then there's the problem of going through everything and you know, I'm like one of those people. I Tina and I would watch those hoarder shows, and I guess you're supposed to feel sorry for these people, but I think I'm one of them, and I, because everything that I look at, I can't throw away anything. I just look at it and there's the organizer woman, right? Does this make you feel joy? Yes. Yes. Every single stupid thing. This is what you know, spouses and those organizing types, they don't appreciate. You know, ask yourself, is this providing joy? Yeah. I look at it and it provides joy. Yesterday I found a thing my mother must have brought back from Vegas in like 1972, give or take. And it's one of those roulette wheels that you push and it spins and the marble, the ball bearing, you know, stops in one of the. I'm not throwing that away or giving that away. I can't do it. Here's how we're going to do this. I will put these pictures up. We'll have like referendums on what, you know, what has to go and what has to stay. Then there's pictures. And this is actually something I think people would like. And I could probably make some other people happy with it. You know, by the way, I've got DRFs of dozens of Breeders' Cups and Triple Crown days and Travers and any big day. I mean, I've got them stacked. There's one, two, there's three boxes I can see right from here. And then there's a couple down in the. And we got like a what they call a summer kitchen, and there's some in there too. So but the pictures, you know, you can't frame them all, and you can't. There's not enough wall space, I don't think, for me to put all this up. I did find a. There's two pictures I did find in their antique little frames. These are 8x10s. One of that classic Man of War that must have been in every barbershop in America from 1920 to, you know, now. I'm sure there's still some hanging on the walls. You know, the one where it's Coomer and Man of War, and it's a confirmation shot, and then it's got the six, I think there's six or seven track records that are printed like in the upper left hand corner. I found that. I got that years and years ago. I got that. I'm going to say it. And that is it Wrightsville? I think it's Wrightsville. Who's in the Cincinnati, Newport, Covington area? There used to be a great antique. I've talked about this. They're the great antique show that would be every 2 weeks, I think, in Wrightsville, and I'm pretty sure I got that there. I got a lot of great stuff there. Started buying Fiesta wear at that show. I had a chance. Tina's sick of hearing this story, so I'll tell you. It's like you're married to me. I went over there one day, and I just started working at Procter & Gamble, and they didn't have a lot of money yet. I think I was making $19,000 a year, 1982. And there was a vendor that had the Fiesta wear, and I didn't have much for it. You know, you're 23 years old, you're 22, whatever I was, I would have been 22. And Yeah, so I had some mix and match. You know, my mother gave me, you know, college to first job, you know, first couple of jobs. And I can't remember if it was a man or a woman, but they had a 120-piece set of Fiesta wear. And 120 or 130 pieces. And they wanted, I think, $300, $325 for all of it. And boy, I mean, I just will never forget. I ended up, you know, I was buying piecemeal. And, I mean, that would have been an unbelievable score. I should have absolutely have scrounged up that money. Again, you know, I mean, on a per piece base, and this is the old Fiesta, not new Fiesta now that you've got, you know, now they've, you know, they've brought back Homer Laughlin. They've brought back, you know, they've got countless colors now, but, you know, back then it was the original, whatever, seven colors. So anyway, you got me all doing nothing, reminiscing here for whatever goofy reason. I also found a picture of Gallant Man, which I love. I love Gallant Man. Got one of those 8x10s. The key is to stop acquiring stuff. That's the key. I've got to pull myself up. There's no more acquiring. We've got to go in the other direction. You get to a certain point, right? And it's hard, though. It's hard. You got because we, you know, we love. I'm going to do this. Tina's got to go do something after school, so I'm going to be left to my own devices. Some of those devices might be playing Keeneland today. Let me hear. Smack me around and knock me, you know, knock me into another into another topic. Keeneland today, as they start the rundown to end the fall meet. They're off the turf. Marty let that be known earlier this morning. And so races 3, 6, and 8 are off the grass. And fairly important, that third race was a mile for two-year-old fillies. So, and it's a big field, so we'll see who stays in. We'll take a look at, here you got Lucas Ward, Delacour, Colebrook, Wilkes, Stahl, Reed McGahee, Wilkes again, McPeak, Delacour again, Asmussen, John Enos, and then there's three AEs and one MTO. So we'll see. We'll see. That'll probably stay pretty well, you know, that'll probably pretty much intact. There's a good second level allowance that was going to go a mile and a 16th on the turf, three and up, fillies and mares. And a couple of names in there that you know, like Golden Curl for Lynch and Carpe Venom, Phil D'Amato, Pass the Plate, Paul McGee. So we'll see. The other feature, the co-feature, fillies and mares going 7/8 on the main track. And this one, again, you got some fairly well-known names. Vicky Oliver, Never Forget. Aurelia Garland in here for Rudy Brissett. Chad's got Union Maiden. O Serafina for Joe Sharp. Impeccable Style for Brendan Walsh. Maybe we'll reach out to Brendan. He won that stake the other day. There's actually a stake at Presque Isle again today, too. Pennsylvania Breds. The Hard Spun. FYI, if you didn't notice this. Monmouth was supposed to have a stake, but I guess it didn't fill. I didn't look at the overnight, but I think the Classy and Smart was supposed to be today, but it's not in there. And then the Nightcap was supposed to be a mile and 3/16 on the turf. This one, we'll see. 10-horse field. We'll see if that stays intact. Anyway, so we'll watch for scratches, and then in hour three, Ed DeRosa will join us, and we'll look at some spots for Keeneland. The card tomorrow, ideally, if this weather is clearing out, The Card Tomorrow is really good. Very nice late sequence. Second level allowance, a mile and a 16th, three and up. A 15 on two, smallish field. And again, some names you know. First level allowance, 7/8 for the boys. Quite nice. Silver State for Asmussen. Take a look at that. And two-year-old boys, long on the turf to close it out. Nice tomorrow if the off-track puts you off at all. Mentioned Monmouth and, of course, Indiana. Indiana's had two off-the-turf days in a row. Ideally, things smooth out for today. And the pick five, kind of nice. Got two allowances, two claimers, and a maiden group, if you want to get into that. So we'll keep an eye on everything news-wise. A lot of Breeders' Cup activity. Marcus actually ended up busy, so we're going to push Marcus to tomorrow. And we'll get his divisions. And there's been some activity, actually, even this morning. Nick Locke reporting. And off of his podcast broadcast. So, Siskin, if you didn't see this, is pretty much confirmed before he goes to stud in Japan. Would be intended for the mile and looking for something firmer than softish going. If the ground is not deep and bottomless, as we've been hearing seemingly every weekend, then Siskin would come. And of course, this is a Judmont product, and would be a nice addition. So we'll watch for that, and it seems like there's going to be some of those, a lot more of these kinds of decisions. And you know, yesterday, a very useful, as I continue to work on my lists here. And in fact, today you're going to get a chance, even without Marcus, we are going to get a chance to go over some players. You did hear, of course, if you were listening to the replay, you heard Michael McCarthy, and I don't know how, I wasn't looking around, but I thought it was certainly noteworthy that he essentially gave you the decisions on CC and Speech, with Speech cutting back for the Philly and Mare Sprint and CC stretching out. And they're both very, feel like savvy maneuvers with both. It's getting down to some of those kinds of decisions. And I also wanted to get the rest of the Cassie lineup, because the news that, in fact, Case, you could reach out for Mark. They go ahead and give Mark a call. And, you know, Cassie, again, the last, I know we talked to him, what, 2 weeks ago? 2 or 3 weeks ago, but I'm going to bring him back. You know, obviously got Stormy's performance last week at Keeneland, and we didn't, you know, I had just talked to him, I think, the previous week, if I'm not mistaken. But the sweep of Helium and Super Sensational over the weekend at Woodbine, and then Super Sensational showing up as a juvenile filly participant. So that, you know, that I thought was a significant addition. And I talked to Marty off air yesterday as various pieces of news were coming in. And the two Tim Ham horses, for instance, the other two fillies, and Tim, you know, firming up what his plans are. I mean, he's flush. But Marty says right now nine firm only for the juvenile fillies. Not that that's a bad number. But Princess Noor, Simply Ravishing, Thoughtfully, Danny Pita with the Princess Secret from Florida, Crazy Beautiful, McPeak's Other, Day Out of the Office, Ham, Girl Daddy, you know, from Romans, talked to Dale last week, Vequist for Butch Reed, and Super Sensational. So we're going to hear a little bit. Super Sensational has been, I mean, just to me, if you haven't seen those two races, have been super impressive. And Mark Cassie joins us. And, I typically try to spread out the visits, Mark, but you've been winning too many stakes over the last couple of weeks.
I don't know about that, Steve, but thanks for having me.
I wanted to talk, and yesterday we actually had two fun conversations, and bittersweet too. Nick Gonzalez was with us, and Gail Cox, and it seems irresistible to reach to you to talk about Helium's win in the display, and most notably Super Sensational, Mark. It feels like she's forcing your hand.
Well, I don't know about that one. But first, before we go anywhere, I just, you know, that was a very emotional race.
Yes.
For Nick to win. And, you know, Martha and Nick have been my friends for 40 years. And it brought tears to my eyes for them to win, you know, for them to win the race. And Martha's been on my mind. So first I wanted to talk about that.
Beautiful.
Say that. As far as Super Sensational, she appears to be, you know, pretty special. I had a conversation yesterday late morning, early afternoon with Mrs. Weber, and she wants to think about it. About the Breeders' Cup, I would say right now that we're probably leaning towards not running.
Okay.
But she's going to make the final decision on that. I heard you talking about, you know, there's only eight or nine horses in it, but it's a pretty strong field. It might be small, but it's mighty. And I just don't know that we're ready to tackle them. I would say if we had been running on dirt, that would be one thing, but we would be throwing two new things at her. That would be dirt and two turns. Now, she's trained exceptionally well on the dirt, and I would be shocked if she didn't like it. I mean, she trained well at Live Oak, and then she also trained very well at our training center in Ocala. So, I'd be shocked if she didn't like the dirt.
Give us a little bit more of the backstory, because I can't even remember if we discussed her off of the maiden win. What was certainly notable about this, she basically just without much encouragement is just, you know, drowning fields and running away from them, and you know, notably. And as we get closer over the next couple of weeks, you know, the Princess Noor, there's going to be this referendum on how fast, quote unquote, she is. But Super Sensational jumps up to an 87 buyer in that Glorious Song the other day. She clearly is in that arena, you know, speed wise. So I just, and shows every indication that two turns is not going to be a problem when the time comes.
Well, you know, Steve, her first start, she won, and the way she did it, she sat back, made a run. And Roger Atfield had a filly in there,
yes,
for Fipke, you know, well-bred filly. And they separated themselves from the field, especially the last quarter of a mile, which is something you always like to see. I think our filly ended up winning by maybe two or three lengths with not a lot of effort. And then the other filly, Roger's filly, was, I want to say, eight or nine in front of the rest of the field.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always important. I have to be honest, when the field came out for the Glorious Song, I looked at it and I said, this is no walk in the park. There were some pretty good fillies shipping in with good numbers. I was kind of surprised. I wasn't surprised. I figured we'd be the favorite, but I didn't think we would be, what were we, 1-2 or something? It was,
yeah.
It was kind of crazy because it wasn't a walk in the park. But it ended up for her being kind of a walk in the park. Patrick said, they asked him how he rode the race, and he said he thought he was on the best horse, so he just went ahead and he said he wasn't going to get cute, and he just kind of let her do what she wanted to do, and she's fast. If she were to run in the Breeders' Cup, she definitely would add some, some heat to the early pace, for sure.
Well, and on that topic, if you haven't gone through the PPs, what is interesting that at this time of year, there isn't necessarily a preponderance of, you know, front end fillies signed on to this.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You've got, obviously the one thing, the fillies from New York have never ran two turns.
Right.
As far as Bob's filly, I thought she ran well. I wasn't overly impressed, to be honest with you. I think if I had to, right now, I thought Gary's filly, Butch Reed's filly, got in some trouble, a little bit of trouble in the, the race in New York. She could have possibly ran a little better. You got to beat Kenny's filly. She's already got a race over the track. She's run two turns. I would consider her the horse to beat.
I keep coming back to Tim Ham's filly.
She's done nothing wrong.
That's for sure.
I mean, she was impressive. Again, she would be facing a similar situation that we're facing, and that is, the two turns. I've always, with Classic Empire and with others, Valdorna and some of the other horses that we've had run well in the juvenile races, I've always felt it was a big, it's why I never ran in the preps for New York. I always went to Kentucky, and that was because I just think it's a big advantage to getting a two-turn race in them. So that's going to be the two questions for the good fillies in New York. Can they get two turns? Now, we also have to look at, I wouldn't even, if it wasn't at Keeneland and we didn't have speed, I don't know that I would even consider the Breeders' Cup at all, but speed at Keeneland going a mile and a 16th is very important with the run to the first turn and then the short stretch. So that's why it's a little more intriguing to me than, say, if we were running at Churchill Downs or Santa Anita or something like that.
Well, if you come, I think she's a now product. If you don't come, there's still another round, right, of main track 2-year-old stakes to come at Woodbine.
Well, what I would do with her is I would come back and run her in the Mazarine, which is a grade three. It's two
right.
turns. At least we're only asking her one question, and that is the question, can she go two turns? We already know the answer to Tapita. We know she likes Tapita. So we would only be asking one question instead of two. And then what I would do, and this is what I've done in the past, if she was successful doing that, then I would start mapping out a plan to get her ready for the Oaks next year, the Kentucky Oaks. And that would more than likely go through New Orleans with David Carroll. Sure. We've had great luck down there. So we would, she'd probably come home for a little bit, get a little break, not much, and get ready, trying to get ready for the Oaks like we did with Wonder Gadot a couple years back, you know.
Well, super sensational. For those that have not seen this Curlin Philly, a Newtown and her stud product that Mrs. Weber paid $725,000 for at Saratoga last year.
I have to tell you this. She helped. She was very instrumental in picking her out. We, of course, she has a place in Saratoga for the summer, so she said she wanted to find a good filly, and we presented her with about six or seven, and this was her choice. So, so she deserves a lot of credit.
It's also nice, you know. There's that version of yearling sale conversation and 2 year old sale conversation that, oh, you know, the ones that pay when they pay seven figures and they don't necessarily pay for themselves, if you're patient, then you can see even the residual. I mean, look at 1.3 carats
when you're buying fillies with pedigree, sometimes it doesn't work out in the beginning, but it works out in the end. I always tell everybody, horse racing is not about, it's like playing baseball. It's not how many runs you score in each inning, it's how many runs you score at the end.